Hi, I'm Lana, and I'm walking the 606 on a sunny day, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is fantastic to be here with you today here on show number 907. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is the engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So good morning to Bob. And again, good morning to you, the listener of the show. And on the show this week, we learn the secret history of local blues harmonica player Dusty Brown. We hear some new music from the local band Cosmic Bull, and we dive into the civic implications of the possibility of using public money to build new sports stadiums in Chicago. Along those lines, we need a better civic imagination right now. We'll get into this in more detail in a bit here on the old program, but let's say the White Sox, who had an average attendance of 21,405 people last season at a ballpark that can seat 40,615, mind you. Let's say the Sox built a new stadium in the South Loop. I'm wondering what happens to Guaranteed Rate Field. I mean, it's a big place, and if the Sox don't play there anymore, well, someone should, right? What about the Bears? I'm sure I'm not the first one to think of this, but the Bears could repurpose Guaranteed Rate Field. I mean, it's already built. It's modern. It doesn't have a toilet bowl that landed in it. And the stadium is in a historic Chicago neighborhood, so there you go. Look, we do have a civic imagination. I mean, think about how we've repurposed the old Morton Salt Warehouse into a very cool music venue called the Salt Shed. We've repurposed the old post office, Cook County Hospital, the London House building, and the Tribune Tower, former home to WGN Radio, and the future home of luxury condos. I miss that place, by the way. 2 weeks ago, I walked by the old Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue on the first floor of the Trib Tower. It's where we used to broadcast from. It's under construction right now, and it looks like it's going to be the showroom for those new luxury condos. Oh, well. Anywho, let's apply some of our civic imagination to the issue of sports stadiums. I mean, we have the capacity to do it. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic here, but we need some of that optimism right now. I mean, look at the guy who fills Chicago potholes with mosaics. His name is Jim Bakker, and he's the ultimate street artist. He gained notoriety a few years ago by finding Chicago potholes, and instead of complaining about them, he created beautiful mosaics and filled the potholes with those mosaics. It's the ultimate repurposing. He's fixing the street and creating free art in the process. There's the Chicago Tool Library. I've had the co-founder of that organization on this show a few times. They accept all kinds of tools that maybe you aren't using anymore, and they add it to their collection. And just like in a traditional library, you can check out the tools, use them for whatever projects you're working on, and then bring them back when you're done. There's the Chicago Reuse Exchange. It's a local nonprofit that redistributes donated surplus materials, equipment, and supplies. Another wonderful idea. I know that we're looking at business interests here. Sports teams want to make money. But I'd argue that having a team in Chicago is a privilege. And it's a responsibility. These teams have a responsibility to the social and economic fabric of this region. Sports teams, if you want our money to increase your business, that is a hard sell. At least, it should be. Chicago is working through a lot right now. We have to ask ourselves the question, what are our priorities as a community? And the conversation about this continues today. Stick around as we beam local, civically engaged audio into your beautiful soul. Chicago loves its sports teams, and we have tremendous loyalty to those teams, which is sometimes hard, especially in these lean years. And I'm right there with you. I enjoy our local teams as much as the next guy, and I have all my life. But the harsh reality of it all is that these teams are businesses, and they make decisions based on making profit. Recently, the White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf began lobbying Springfield to grant the organization public money to build a new stadium for the team on 62 vacant acres in the South Loop. The cost to taxpayers for this to happen? More than $1 billion or so. Tom Tresser is a civic educator and public defender, and he has been working towards greater government transparency as well as good government spending practices for years. We could check out his website, Tresser.com, T-R-E-S-S-E-R, Tresser.com, and he is here with us once again on Outside the Loop. Tom, I thought you were kind of taking it easy here with this stuff, but now here you are back at it, man.
Hey, you ever see The Godfather Part 3? Corleone says he wants to retire, but then they keep pulling me back.
that's what's happening here.
The headline you just gave is kind of the answer there. I am driven crazy by these billionaires who want billions of our dollars, and Reinsdorf is just one of three, count them, three billionaire families making the play right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we look at the history here, Illinois taxpayers, we've been through this before. We're still paying off the renovation for Soldier Field, for example. But give us some history on this practice of Illinois taxpayers helping to foot the bill for our teams.
Oh, well, sadly, Chicago is not alone. There are about 12 cities right now across the country whose sports owners, billionaire, mostly white men sports owners, are seeking at least a total of $10 billion for various stadiums all over Kansas City, Alexandria, Virginia. It's a long list. But going way back to the 80s, late 80s, they literally stopped the clock in Springfield. So this vote could be taken literally at, I don't know, midnight, 1 o'clock. It's like in some kind of null zone of the Twilight Zone. That allowed this vote to happen, which created the Sports Authority, which then was able to create the financing for what we now know as, I don't know, what is it called now? Guaranteed Field?
Yeah, White guaranteed Sox field. Yeah, it's gone through like seven changes, but it's Guaranteed Rate Field is the name.
Guaranteed
of it.
Rate Field, right. So it's you know, and the parking is controlled by Reinsdorf. It's just a wonderful sweetheart deal, and it's multiple millions of dollars a year from the state and the city to pay into that fund that keeps that going. But meanwhile, at the same time, a little further towards the lake, you know, we bankrolled the renovation of Soldier Field. Now, that's owned by the Park District, but the hundreds of millions of dollars of construction to make that strange flying saucer.
The toilet bowl, yeah.
That seems to have landed on the old structure. That's on us. And I think the Bears, what, they play 8 games, 10 games, whatever it is they play a year, you know, there. The rest of the time, it's kind of, you know, up for grabs. Hundreds of millions of dollars of debt and payment to us, the citizens. So those are the two things that are standing that we're still paying for. But that's not enough. So apparently, Mr. Reinsdorf has decided that, you know what, that field isn't good enough, you know, over there. And he doesn't fill it. Go figure. He wants a more updated stadium to be put in what's known as Project 78 there along the Chicago River. And he's not bashful about asking over $1 billion in public funds to do it. Now, it's in the middle of a TIF district if he gets his way. So I'm already had a mild stroke from fighting the Project 78 TIF, which is existing,
right,
and into which this new project presumably would benefit.
Right. You know, and it's interesting here. I said that Chicago sports fans are very loyal. Reinsdorf, and again, he's running a business here, and that's a harsh reality, like I said, because he was ready to leave.
Yeah.
He was ready to take the White Sox to a different, to Florida, I think, in 88. He's ready to take them to Nashville now.
Well, so are the Bears. They're ready to go to Arlington Heights or Schaumburg. I mean, I don't know. How do you fit the Schaumburg Bears, you know, on your baseball cap? But I'd say to them and you know, to your listeners and fans, I'm not a sports fan, so I'm indifferent. I'm much more passionate about civics and politics, I guess. But nevertheless, the loyalty seems to be one way. I guess is what I'm trying to say is the fans, you know, are loving the teams, you know, rain or shine. But the owners are ready to flip the bird and hold up some other city for hostage.
Right. And you asked the question here, which is the question: what is the need for spending public dollars on sports stadiums in light of all the pressing needs Chicago faces? I mean, we have a migrant issue, we have homelessness that we're facing, we have crime, of course, education issues, and all of the public money, I mean, goes to that, and we're still struggling with a lot of those. And here we are saying, hey, let's build this brand new shiny thing for billions of dollars, and let's use public money to do it. I just don't see how you square that circle.
Well, and as I have to say, that now there's not just the Reinsdorf family, you know, who are billionaires. Their net worth is about $2 billion. It's Jerry Reinsdorf. But there's also the McCaskey family, Virginia McCaskey and her various offspring. She's worth about $2 billion. Now, she's saying, well, maybe we'll stay in Chicago, but maybe we won't. Maybe we'll go to Arlington Heights. They've been fighting the property tax valuation for the school districts tooth and nail. Again, the school children would lose big time if they did complete this deal and go to Arlington Heights. But now they're saying, well, maybe we'll stay here and take over one of the fields, one of the parking lot areas, you know, along the lakefront. Now you're back in the battle that happened a few years ago when George Lucas tried to build a museum for his lightsaber collection along the lakefront, you know, and he got into trouble with the Friends of the Parks, who sued his ass.
Yeah.
Because you just can't build willy-nilly along the lakefront. So we'll be in that same area of dispute before we even get into public money, you know, for the Bear Stadium. Then there's the Ricketts family. Let's not forget the other billionaire sports team owners. They want, a few things. One of the Ricketts wants money for the soccer team, the Red Stars.
Red Stars, yeah.
So she wants... Look, as long as the guys are getting a stadium, can't the ladies get a stadium? Come on, you know.
And that's their argument, is equity, yeah.
The quote is, women's sports need to have a seat at the table. We need to be in the mix, because otherwise we're just going to end up chasing our tail around how to grow women's sports. So say an executive connected to the Red Stars. Well, what table are you talking about? Are you talking about the table where billionaires are grabbing billions of public dollars? I don't want that table. Any more people sitting at that table.
Right.
I'm sorry. You have to laugh. And then the other side of the Ricketts family wants $30 million. That's peanuts comparatively to boost security outside Wrigley Field that might help them get an All-Star game. So, $30 million here, a billion there, you know, it starts to add up.
Yeah, it does. And this is the trend we're seeing here. And you call on Chicago's major civic groups to call this out, what's happening here. And you're saying these civic groups need to watch our backs. And yes. You're critical of them because you say, look, in the past, these civic groups, they have not done that. And specifically, you're talking about like when the Olympics almost came to Chicago, there wasn't the due diligence that needed to be done in Chicago.
Well, sure. So that calls out this work that I was part of, back in the day. So we're talking about 2008, 2009. Those with civic memories around here will recall No Games Chicago. So you can go to nogameschicago.com. And relive the wonderful moments of what I call the battle for the bid. Remember, Mayor Daley threw everything he had at bringing the 2016 Olympics to Chicago. He raised about $90 million. He had everybody, including Oprah, beating the drum for this. I mean, civic leaders told me privately they thought it was a stupid idea. It was a waste of resources to even seek the Olympics, let alone land them. But they daren't go up against Mayor Daley, who was, a mean SOB, and he would go after his enemies, pretty forthrightly. And he'd never lost anything. Remember, he was in power, I think at that time, maybe 20 years or something, right? Mm-hmm. Never lost anything in city council. And everybody around the world, sports books, academic places and professional sports folk were all saying, oh, it's Chicago's bid to lose. Everybody was saying that. No Game Chicago. We're the only group, really, that did any serious organizing and public meetings and to research, to due diligence, as you said, that said the Olympics are a city killer. And they're no boon to the city. They're horrible. They make a few people a lot of money. So where was these major civic groups? And the two that I call out in this recent email I sent out are the Civic Federation and the Chicago Metropolitan Planning Council. So these two are nonprofits. They're both headquartered in the Loop. And they each have budgets of about $2 million in change a year with, of course, robust staffs, like PhD economic guys and map makers and all kinds of smart folk who work there. Well, where were they when the Olympics were coming to town? No place. The Civic Federation did a whitewash study that backstopped the bid. It came out, just before the city council voted. It was complete fiction and fabrication. A high school student, with a calculator could have slayed that report for all its inaccuracies. Okay, so that's the past. There's new leaders for both those organizations. I mean, are we going through this all over again where you've got not one, not two, but three powerful billionaire families who have deep roots right here in the city of Chicago? So maybe they're even more formidable than the IOC. I guess you might say that since they're right here, right? Mm-hmm. And they own those teams and they have deep roots with the politicians and they give money to these politicians. So in some way, you might say this is even worse than seeking the Olympics, because the Olympics, there were three other bidders. So, even if No Game Chicago hadn't done a thing, maybe, just by the law of averages, maybe we wouldn't have gotten them. But in any case, here we are again. $2 billion, $3 billion, what's it going to be?
Tom, I know you are still very much engaged in these civic issues, and we can go to Tresser.com. We can subscribe to your newsletter. You're always doing some research about these issues, but this is something that we have to keep our eye on here, and this is something that is affecting all of us. We're all taxpayers. This is going to impact us one way or the other. And we should have some say in this. So part of that is we have to get educated. And that's what you are helping us to do. So I always appreciate our conversations, Tom. Tom Tresser is a civic educator and public defender. Again, check out Tresser.com and subscribe to his newsletter. Tom, thank you, sir, as always. I enjoy our conversation. Something tells me that we'll be talking about this stuff again.
I hope so. I look forward to it very much. And to all your listeners out there, stay safe, stay smart, stay strong.
And let's talk about some local music right now from Cosmic Bull. This project has a new album coming out on March 8th. That's next Friday. And they have a record release show that night in Chicago. Mark Vickery is a local musician and he is behind the Cosmic Bull project. He is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Mark, nice to talk to you again. How are you, man?
Nice to talk to you too, Mike. So excited about this upcoming album coming out and the show that we've got to feature it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, it is going to be fun, and this is exciting. The last time, by the way, you and I chatted was just over 2 years ago, January 2022 on this show,
That's right.
And we were talking because you put together at that time a couple of EPs after a 20-year hiatus in the local music scene. So remind us, Mark, what was going on? 20 years not playing around here, and now you're back.
20 years of just doing whatever I wanted to do in the studio and not having to answer to anybody about what it was I was playing and what I was focusing on and writing songs and not finishing them. And it wasn't until I was kind of, well, COVID was part of it, and then something else. Well, COVID was a big part of it, because all these musicians that I wanted to have produce, nor producers that I wanted to have work on my stuff, were suddenly available. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that was back when Scott Tallarita did the thing at Trigger, which was called 27x2, and that was an EP. And then I was doing some recordings with Paul Von Mertens, who was on tour with Brian Wilson for like a quarter of a century.
Wow.
And it was never around, but he was like, yeah, I'll record your stuff. You know, I'll produce you when I have some time.
Sure.
I finally did that. And then, but see, this is different now, because I found out that in the 2 years of releasing singles and EPs and stuff that are just studio projects only, that people, you know, it's not enough. Like, fine. So I might give it a little. You don't really get very far unless I think people know you've got some skin in the game. And that's why I've started a band for this version of Cosmic Bowl, and we've now got an hour's worth of original material, and that's what we put more or less on this new LP that we're coming out with.
Wow. Yeah. So I mean, you've been someone who's been playing in Chicago for a while. You have a lot of history here, some time away, as we've been saying, and now you're back in the game. And so here we are with this full-length album. So this is some new music, some original music. The new album is called Band Substances, band spelled B-A-N-D. I see what you did there, Mark. I see what you did.
Yes.
It sounds great. And I'm wondering, you know, what was the goal here? Because the sound that you have with Cosmic Bowl is really, I think it's really cool. You know, you've got some rock, you've got some spacey, trippy stuff going on in there too. You know, poetry. What were you going for here with this new record?
I think it's just a natural progression of what I've been doing, like I said, for just in the nebula of two chord vamps for 20 minutes in my basement when I'm, you know, a little overserved on a Thursday evening or whatever. And then to writing actual songs, getting produced, putting them out. Now it's doing more songs. Either I wrote them ahead of the band coming together and they just learned them, or we kind of worked on it as we were, you know, I was like, oh, here's a part. What can we do with this? And we kind of would work them out together. So it's definitely the furthering of the process, right? As a songwriter and as a, I guess, a presenter of music, as the front man of the band now, mm-hmm. It's just my responsibility now to kind of have it be more about something bigger than just a couple recordings that I did with my friends who are super talented. But people, here's an example of why I've done what I've done. I would tell people, hey, I've just released some songs. You know, they're out right now. Great. Where are you playing?
Right.
Like, what do you think where I'm playing? You don't even know if I'm any good. Like, why would you even ask me that question? I think it's because people want to know. Like I was saying before, how much do you believe in what you're doing? Do you believe enough in it to start a band and go playing some gigs and, you know, kind of, I don't know. It's not easy getting back into the game.
Yeah.
It's really not that easy. You have to kind of reestablish connections. And once we've done that, I'm sure it'll be much easier. But right now, it's still that growing stage where people have to kind of for the first time, be familiarized with what I'm doing and what the band's doing.
So if you're in that conversation where someone says, "Oh, you're in a band, cool. Okay, you're playing out. What's your music like?" What do you tell them what your music's like?
I always say the same thing. I say, "Well, I call it rock."
Sure.
And I let them figure out what that means, because rock is it is, and that's exactly accurate as well. Like, I think this is a rock band. Mm-hmm. There's times you could have said some of the other songs that I'd recorded previously was like, oh, that sounds kind of folky, you know, it's like acoustic guitars and minimal production or whatever, or that sounds a little like, you know, like you were talking the spacey stuff that we were doing with some effects in the studio at Trigger,
right?
This has a lot of those components, because first of all, it's still generally my songwriting. This is my voice singing this range, this low range, lots of ninth chords and groovy tempos and stuff. But people like Jim Deneau, who is just if you don't, if you haven't experienced who Jim Danu is, Cosmic Bowl Band Substance, this is a great introduction because this guy is really something else. He's a force of nature on keyboards and other instruments.
And this album, Band Substances, I mean, this is coming out March 8th. So
yeah.
You know, the next question people are probably asking you, where can we get your music? So what's the plan with this?
All right. So the single is out right now. So we have a single called Once the Dust Settles. And that is available on at Bandcamp. We're going to have things available on our website also, which is cosmic-bull.com. There's also a Facebook page. I don't have the URL right there, but if you're on Facebook, you can look up Cosmic Bull and we're there as well. But as far as buying the actual single, you can do that right now on Bandcamp. You'll be able to have access to the album March 8th. And that, then we're also pressing vinyl, but that won't be ready for March 8th, unfortunately. Oh, what happened?
Once the dust settles down. Also, March 8th is the record release show. You're playing Gallery Cabaret 2020 North Oakley in Chicago. Really, if you like neighborhood joints, Gallery Cabaret is where it's at.
I mean, it is. It's an old school place. It's been there for a long time. They haven't really changed it from when they first started having these shows back in the past. It looks like it could have been like a puppet theater originally.
I know,
and
right?
And it's actually across the street from my dad used to be the principal of the elementary school. Pulaski School. So if you know where that is, and it's where, like, he'd be super happy to know that that school has actually come from where it was when he was the principal to being like the place that you want to send your kids now if you raise them in Bucktown in Chicago. But anyway, so yeah, the Gallery Cabaret, really good venue. We're playing at midnight, so it's gonna be fun. It's gonna have a little bit of a different feel to it, different atmosphere, being so late into the evening, and I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with it.
First of all, you get some, I'm sure, colorful characters in there who've been out all night, but also just the vibe is cool. You know, I mean, you're doing your thing. It's an intimate setting. It's this corner spot, and they have shows all the time there. It's a great spot, a great neighborhood joint. And I just think it's going to be kind of a cool, you know, there'll be some rock to it, but it'll be a very intimate vibe.
Yeah. And I think because it's a 4-piece band, it fits well on a stage like that. These musicians do fill up a lot of space, though. So even though I wouldn't say it's super loud and noisy, but it's very musical and we will fill that room sonically, if not otherwise as well. But I expect we're going to have a lot of people out because people are interested in hearing the new music, I think. And even if some people are familiar with the new band, we've played a few other shows over the past year. But generally speaking, this is kind of the coming out party, if you will, for this band.
And then, is this going to kick off more shows in 2024?
Yeah, that's the kind of the idea of the album in the first place, because we recorded it pretty much live in the studio in order to have that live band feel to it. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't play a live show and record that, but we kind of made sure everything was controlled, but we didn't do a lot of overdubs and stuff like that. So we want this to represent what the band sounds like. And as such, listen to the album, you'll know whether or not you want this band to play at your club. So I'm thinking this will help us, not just among people who like to listen to music, but by people who book locally and around, nationwide. Why not? I don't know. Wherever.
Why not?
Wherever.
Yeah.
Coming wherever music is appreciated.
That's right. It's coming to a place near you. Cosmic Bull. I love it. The website is cosmic-bull.com. Also on Facebook, if you just search for Cosmic Bull. The new record really sounds great, Mark. This is very exciting. I'm really happy for you guys. And everyone should check out the show on Friday, March 8th at Gallery Cabaret, 2020 North Oakley in Chicago. It's in the Bucktown neighborhood in Chicago. And Mark Vickery, local musician from the band Cosmic Bull. Hey, Mark, it's always great talking to you. I'm so happy that you're having some success here. And good luck with everything going forward, man.
Thank you so much, Vin. Mike, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thanks for everybody listening. And thanks to WGN. Really appreciate it.
In the the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of one Mr. Steve Krakow, the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader. He is also a music historian, artist, and musician. And, you know, Steve, you know I love this. I mean, we're getting bluesy again. You're doing a winter blues edition of The Secret History of Chicago Music, although winter than not winter, who knows what it is. But here's what we do know. Dusty Brown is playing a mean harp, isn't he?
He is, and, you know, didn't we have, like, a blizzard a couple days or 4 days? I can't even remember. When was that? Last weekend, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I was writing this one around then or editing it or something like that. You know, anyways, you know, just a cool, underrated dude, period, who, you know, sadly didn't record a ton, but then you see everything he did and who he played with and, you know, basically his total authenticity slash, you know, he's like an archetypal bluesman, you know?
Right. And under the radar, I mean, I love blues. I play the harmonica. I've never heard of Dusty Brown. So this is one that's truly under the radar. At least it is for me.
I thought maybe, you know, gave you some lessons at some point or something like that, you know?
I mean, you know, he's been everywhere. I mean, this is an example of someone, like we say, has encountered the greats. And I guess that for that period of time in the 20th century, coming up in Chicago, you could do that. But you're right. He is sort of, he has this archetypal story. He's born in Mississippi, right? He's from the Mississippi Delta. He's born Clement W. Triplett, which I think is a great name. He's born in 1929.
You're right. You know, I was thinking that too. I was like, wow, that would have been a cool, you know, name too. But hey.
Yeah. I mean, Dusty Brown is cool. Could have gone by like Clee Tripp. Or something like that. I don't know. I'm spitballing here. All right. So he's born in Mississippi in 1929. And he comes. His mother is going to come to Chicago when he is like 8 or 9. That's how this whole thing starts.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and it's, you know, we were basically on the like, quote unquote, Mississippi blues trail. No, not even quote unquote. It's a real thing, yeah. You know, and yeah, you know, you wanted to kind of go try and make it in a major city. You know, some of the family would maybe go try. Some would stay on the farm and they were, you know, sharecroppers, which is another, you know, sort of very archetypal thing in the blues, you know, and the roots of it, you know, were. And they're, I mean, from a really, sounds like a pretty small town, Trail Lake, I guess it was near Greenville, Mississippi. But yeah, I guess his mom kind of even urged him to come to Chicago, but he's like, no, I just kind of want to hang out on the farm, and kind of figured out he wasn't a good tractor driver, kind of figured out he wasn't that great a farmer, and you know, picked up his brother's harmonica and was like, oh, you know, this is maybe what I want to do.
I love that story. He picked up a harmonica that was just kind of left around by one of his brothers. And he just liked the feel, which that's kind of how I started too. I came across an old harp from my grandpa, and it just felt good.
It sounds like he didn't even really have that much, you know, like necessarily hearing that much blues music as a kid, but as a teenager, he was driving around this guy, Eddie Cusick, who sounds like a real character. Basically, so if I didn't put it in the strip, so he could like drink in the back seat, Eddie Cusick, with his ladies. He had him driving him around to gigs. So, you know, he picked up a couple things, and he ended up being sort of a mentor, Eddie Cusick, to some kind of heavy hitter guys as well. Lil Milton.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, when he came here, he had like a little exposure to that life and as an experience as a driver. So he became a cab driver here in Chicago.
That's right. In 1946, Dusty Brown moves to Chicago. He's working as a cab driver. He's picking up shifts here and there. And this gives him an opportunity to go around town to see a bunch of really great talent that comes through here.
Yeah. And like a lot of these cats, he was a decent player. He was, you know, in the thick of things and just sort of jumped right in the scene. And then little Walter lives in his mom's building.
Another crazy, just cosmic connection. Little Walter, I mean, amazing blues musician, lives in the same building as Dusty Brown's mother. And so they get to be friends.
Takes Dusty Brown down to Chinatown for some good Chinese food. I guess allegedly driving him back streets because he didn't have a license. you know, or whatever. It's amazing. And yeah, and I thought he really I found one really great interview with Dusty, and he really eloquently sort of describes what was, you know, just so amazing, how on another level like little Walter was, you know, right. Just like there's, you know, guys who play the guitar, and then there's like Jimi Hendrix, you know, who's like looking forward while looking backwards, while looking at the moment, while doing something completely new no one's ever heard before. And he's just like kind of like one of those guys, you know. And then at the same time, sounds like a real character and down to earth kind of dude at the same time, you know. So yeah, it sounds like he hops into things right away, and he wants to get a band going.
He's eventually going to get out there, isn't he?
Yeah, he's sitting in with Buddy Guy and Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Eddie Taylor. There's just like jam sessions you could just jump on, you know, and same time checking out all the dudes that were sort of like his competition. And he didn't record much. He just did like a couple singles. He finally got to put out a couple things in like the mid-50s. And he's got a cool band on him. They're actually... It's good stuff. It is really good. It's real raw, sort of like dirty, you know, raw blues with like a really good cast on them. But, you know, you do a couple sort of like 78s and singles, it's, you know, you're probably not going to set the world on fire.
Yeah, she gone. Yeah, she gone. Yeah, she gone. Yeah, she gone. Yeah, she gone.
Yeah, I mean, Dusty Brown is going all over the world eventually. He's playing with a lot of people. He's here in Chicago. He is going on tour all over the place. But nothing really takes off. I feel like there's some, I don't know, fits and starts. Like, he's going to play a bunch, then he's not. And then he's coming back for more to play. And nothing in terms of momentum, I feel, really puts him, you know, into that stardom category.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't really a band leader kind of guy, you know, per se. And yeah, he had some good opportunities, you know, come to him. You know, he played with this dude, Luther Johnson, who is kind of a badass, and that's who, you know, what sort of took him overseas in the early 70s. But you know, he was a guy who always maintained a day job. I mean, he had a club. So he comes back from tour and gets canned, which, by the way, has happened to me. you know, they say, oh, you got a job, and then you come back and you're like, no, you don't. And he'd been there 12 years at this regular day job, so they can him. So he goes down to Joliet, and he's working for Caterpillar, and I know exactly where that is, actually. And downstate Illinois, there's one in Decatur, there's another plant. So, you know, that's like not an easy job. And then he's maintaining a club in Chicago Heights, getting all these legendary people to sit in, like Jimmy Dawkins, you know, who played with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and stuff. And then playing too on the weekends.
That's amazing.
So he's hardworking. You know, it wasn't from a lack of any of that. And then, yeah, finally, you know, in 91, and this happens to so many people, he basically retired. I don't know where the blues was really at that point. He's taking care of his partner's, like, ailing parents, and he's, like, living in a trailer, you know, in Alabama. But then he comes back, and, of course, dudes are like, of course we know you're legend, and he's playing with all these people back in the 2000s, and he joined this thing called the Chicago Blues Harmonica Project with all these super cool dudes, and, you know, he's, like, a featured player on this thing that, you know, sort of honors these people.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so he's going to play the Chicago Blues Fest in 2005.
There's a chance I could have seen that, you know. Yeah. I was trying to think. I was like, ah, man, I did real good chance. You know,
yeah, same, actually. Same.
Yeah.
So Dusty Brown is no longer with us, unfortunately, but this is an opportunity to get his music out there. Not a ton, as you say, that has been recorded, but to get this story out there, and it's just a really interesting life. Hardworking guy, as you say. That definitely comes through. But just a great harp player, great blues guy.
Definitely had a crazy arc. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, I found another quote by him where he's like, I don't push myself in music. Back when I wanted to do it, I couldn't get to where I wanted to get then. So I'm not going to kill myself playing no music now. Just now and then suits me. So he chilled out there at the end. He had a total legacy playing Blues Fest, you know, as late as the, you know, early 2000s. And I think it'll be remembered. If I can definitely put that out there, I'm going to do it. And check out those singles. They're pretty hot stuff.
Agree. So Dusty Brown, the late Dusty Brown, Chicago guy, Chicago Blues, originally from Mississippi. He is blowing on the harp, and he sounds really good. And we got the full story of Dusty Brown in this week's Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader. So go on to chicagoreader.com, pick up a copy of the Reader, and check out the story and see what Steve is drawing, because he draws everyone that he profiles as well. Draws all those pictures by hand. Steve Krakow, artist, musician, local music historian. Steve, I'll tell you what, you know, it's the blues. It's kind of, I guess now it's not really winter anymore, but we can still celebrate the blues here. We're going to do that.
I think I can sneak in one more, and we didn't mention the name yet, but just to leave people in suspense, because it's one of the best names I've ever heard. Hip Link Chain.
Well, you know I love you, baby. When I get the money I make.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 907 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the program this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his stellar engineering help in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. Come on back next time. I'll be here. Can't wait to talk to you here on Outside the Loop.